You're listening to the Geek Legacy Escape Pod.
The crew coming together and gelling and becoming this, like, you know, intergalactic family that we know and love.
And wacky mayhem ensues.
It just feels like they're trying so hard to capture the fans of the original series.
Yeah, that was hot garbage.
He just got, like, weird, like, creepy uncle weird.
That was a bold choice.
Yeah, I had fun with it.
That's true. It was the 80s.
It must be so bad that they just never rewrite.
You won't make it in the future, do you?
I don't think so, no.
I am not a Tosh ER fan. That's probably the nicest thing I will say.
That is absolutely perfect way to describe it.
Yeah.
Hey there, geek boys and girls. Welcome back to Geek Legacy's Escape Pod, where we tackle Star Trek The Next Generation, watching it some 30-odd years later after it originally aired, as men in our 40s, trying to recapture our youth and seeing, is this show as good as we remember it, or is it full of more turkey episodes than good ones? So with me this fine evening is one Mr. David Edmondson. How are you doing, sir?
Oh shit, I've never been first. I'm so good. I'm so excited. I was so caught off guard. I'm fantastic, I know. Randy. It's the greatest day of my life.
Sweet. How's your battery doing this week?
It's somebody.
Yes. Yeah. And the world is going to pay now that they realize it.
Or maybe Randy's just finally learned after 300 and some episodes of Geek Legacy Podcast, it's always a bad idea to go to me second because I'm just going to derail us for like 15 minutes.
Right. We used to go to you first. It was always David first, and then it switched to Randy.
You guys are
crazy. Yeah.
That's smart. So I'm fantastic. How are you, Randy?
You know, I'm doing pretty well. And I do enjoy me a good Q episode. So I think we're going to have some fun talking about this week's episode.
And we got Riker Q. We got Q Riker. We got Riker Q. I don't know, but I'm excited.
Are we shipping these two? Is that what we're doing?
QR code.
When Riker got the Q powers, I was like, oh, man, I'd watch this show.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was pretty badass because you can only imagine what somebody, well, you don't have to imagine. We got to see what somebody like Riker would do with those powers. So
he would have gotten all the women.
Oh,
more than he normally would.
He already did, but I mean, he just would have crushed it to there and back.
Yeah.
Justin.
I bet Riker rakes. I bet Riker rakes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Justin, how are you in this fine week?
I'm fabulous. No complaints.
Good.
I was glad to watch another episode of Star Trek TNG. I liked last week's episode, and I was in the minority. So I was still kind of riding that high. And so I was an eager little beaver to watch this week's episode.
Yeah, and I think we should address the elephant in the room of all of the nays. There have been a couple episodes where there were really borderline nays. You know, I'd say out of you know, I think I've given like six nays, I would say like three were probably borderline to where, you know, maybe, you know, if I caught on a different day, I could maybe be swayed one or the other. Only three of them, I would say, were like hardcore, like, this is just terrible.
I totally agree with what David just said. And even in last week's episode, I did say that Justin almost swayed me. And the only reason why it didn't work is because what you were pitching to me is an episode that could have been, you know, had you written it or had it been conceived the way that you described it, it would have been a total yay. But just judging it at face value on the merit of what was actually done at the time, I couldn't give it a yay. But I don't know. I might be feeling kind of generous with this episode. So I'm really curious to see if you guys push me one way or the other over the fence on this, because I'm still kind of straddling it. So let's go ahead and kind of dive into the quick little blurb from IMDb right now. So this week's episode was called Hyde and Q. It originally aired on November 21st, 1987. And it's rated 7 stars. It's one of the higher rated episodes of this season. So it's got that behind it. The quick little one sentence blurb is, the Enterprise encounters Q again, and he tempts Riker by endowing him with the powers of the Q. And we were kind of speculating last week when we read that out, like, what does that mean? You know, like, I totally didn't remember this episode in advance.
And real quick, this is episode 9, is that correct?
Episode 9. We're calling this episode 9, yes. And up to this point, we have given out 6 nays and 2 yays. So that means we have collectively agreed on 2 good episodes and 6 not as good episodes.
Oh. But we're getting a note to our parents to do better.
I know.
We're failing. I know.
But I mean, we're only 9 episodes in, and there's like what, 26 episodes per season or something ungodly like that. So there's a lot of material to get through, 7 years worth. So, good God, when I think about it, it's going to take us a while to get to the end of this marathon. But I'm really enjoying it. I look forward to these days where I come home from work and I'm like, gotta watch Star Trek so I can talk to the boys about it, you know, and. Yeah, and yeah, it's like a destination. It's something that I look forward to every week. So thank you for giving me that. You all have given me a gift. Speaking of gifts, all right, who wants to jump off with their first initial thoughts on this episode?
Go for it, Dave.
All right. So you know, I've made it clear that out of all of the, you know, the characters, we all know they'll grow into the beautiful butterflies we know them as. But you know, Riker has been a surprise in that he's just out of the box of the light. I don't think I appreciated Riker when I first watched this series, and this episode, you know, had a heavy Riker lean to it. And I just like that he just doesn't give a fuck about Q. Like when Hugh shows up on the Enterprise, he starts laughing at him. I mean, this is this omnipotent being, and he's just like, this fucking guy again. I thought we were done with this crackpot. And there were several moments in the show that really, really started to gleam the characters that these people would eventually be like. Like Worf in this episode cracked me up. So he was like so spry in this episode. There's like three scenes in this show where like he like jumps over things, and like one is like he's in the bridge and he like jumps over the console to like pull this phaser on Q, like that's gonna do anything. And then when they're on the planet and they're fighting against those like those weird like
animal creatures they call them or whatever.
Yeah. And like Riker like tests the phaser and like shoots a rock, and like fucking that, like out of nowhere, like Worf like just leaps in a frame. It's like it's ready to go. Like this got his phaser just like set to stun. I'm like, oh,
man. And Riker's like, whoa, 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 I was just testing to see if our phasers still work. Yeah. Calm down.
I'm afraid that's my fault. Sorry.
And I think this was a good episode for Data. You know, I think Data kind of is going back and forth between the I am a super robot, I know everything, to where I like Data when he's kind of when he's more curious and he doesn't understand like there's some episodes where I think he forgets he's an android and he doesn't understand people's reaction to him. And this one, I kind of got a real good vibe of like, you know, this is like kind of the Data that I would grow to love. And this episode had more for LaForge to do. It seems like a lot of episodes, there's not that much for LaForge to do. So for those reasons, I was happy to watch this episode.
Yeah, and I've got a list of things as I am prone to do when we're talking on the show. I make a list as I watch the episode, and I've got a lot of stuff that we're going to get into about LaForge later on, but we're going to hold off on that until we kind of chronologically get to that point in the episode. So yeah, when we first see Q in this one, he's kind of like this glowing ball with three snakes, like cobras, on top of it, before he manifests in his humanoid-looking form. And then he's just wearing like this wacky, like Admiral, like super extra thick on the gold glitter and trim, like the Starfleet Admiral's uniform, as he's taunting them. Which kind of reminds me of some of the stuff like in our future encounters with him, where he does wear the Starfleet uniform and he does kind of more or less impersonate. I don't know if we want to call it impersonate, but he does kind of like take the form of higher ranking officers.
That right. Kind of thing. He's like an just admiral, and at first, and then he
considers himself like, well, he's like a
marshal. He does, yeah, he does. He does admiral when he comes onto the Enterprise, and then I think he's a marshal when he's on the field of battle.
Right, exactly. Like in full Napoleonic gear, you know.
Like what? Little water slide.
Exactly. With his little like field command tent and stuff like that, but it's on a totally alien planet with like green skies, and you can totally tell it's just another one of those things where they're like, all right, let's get some rocks and dirt and throw it in the soundstage, paint the walls green, and we'll call it done. You know, here we're doing all of our alien planet exteriors on this really shitty looking little soundstage, but it served its purpose for this pretty well. But yeah, just the different outfits that Q was wearing definitely shows that he considered himself higher than the humans. And you could tell it visually, whether he was in the Admiral outfit or whether he was in the Marshal outfit, or even later in the episode when he appears as like a monk, you know, and he's throwing like religious isms out at them and that kind of thing. He just considers himself better than these humans every step of the way. But let's just kind of continue on down the thing. So Yar talks back to him, and he like blinks her out of existence temporarily, puts her in the penalty box.
Loved it.
And then what turns out, when she's in this penalty box, she's on the Enterprise with Picard. Picard is trapped on the bridge. He literally, everybody else gets like zapped down to the planet. And he's left to his own devices on the bridge by Q. He can't talk to anybody. He can't even record a captain's log, and he can't even open a door to leave or go anywhere. He's just stuck in that room, not knowing what's going on. Then all of a sudden, boom, Yar appears, and she like has this emotional breakdown, and it's a piece of what I noted as like really bad overacting. And then there's like this weird kind of awkward wooden exchange between the two of them, where he's like, "We'll make a new rule where you can cry on the bridge when it's really extreme circumstances," or something like that. It just felt like really kind of weird and out of place. But then Q appears there and kind of like fills him in on what's going on, then releases Yar out of the boo box, out of the penalty box, and she's able to go back down to the planet. So then all of a sudden, not only do we have Q in his Napoleonic outfit, but we have like all of these alien faced dudes wearing like total Napoleonic outfits with their rifles, their muskets, and it looks like they're coming in a battle formation, and everyone's like, are these just like, you know, like black powder and ball shooting muskets? Like, these are no big deal. Then all of a sudden they start shooting at them, and they're phasers, and they start freaking out because it's not just the old ancient weapons that they thought they would be. But then they start like evaluating these people who are dressed in these uniforms, and they keep referring to them as animal things. They aren't people. They aren't necessarily humanoids. They're just animal things. And they kept calling them that all through the entire episode. And it just felt like weird. They were trying to not personalize them or disassociate them from being people so that we didn't care about them when they would just like get killed or something like that. But it just, every time they said that, it just kind of was like nails on a chalkboard for me. And then meanwhile, you know, Q is talking to Riker, basically saying, "Hey, you're the best of this bunch here. You don't need these people. You know, you could have the power of Q by your side. You know, you could do all these. You've seen me do some fantastical shit. You could do some fantastical shit. You're never going to know what you're capable of." And this is the exact quote that I wrote down here. "You'll never understand until you become one of us." And that was like a very certain thing. Like, he's on the mission to recruit Riker to become a Q, a member of the Q continuum. And he is going to, you know, put that carrot on a stick in front of him, saying like, "You know what? Yeah, I'll give you a taste. I'll give you a little taste. Here's what omnipotence feels like." And, you know, just pops a little power into him. You guys want to talk about what happens from there?
Sure. So once he gets the power, he teleports the crew back to the Enterprise, right? That's what happens. Mm-hmm. And,
Wesley pops down on the planet and stuff first.
Wait, tell this
to Or was that, or is that on the bridge? Because we the first time we see him use his Q powers, so the advancing, I'm sorry to step over you, Justin.
No, you're fine.
The first time we see those animal things, soldiers like advancing and start shooting at them and stuff like that, they're like coming. And for whatever reason, it really seems like they could have used, they could have done a lot more. Like, the Enterprise crew could have done a lot more to combat this because everything was happening so slow. But fucking Worf gets knocked down and run through by a goddamn bayonet. And then, Wesley the one that got run through first? No, it was Worf first, and then Wesley runs over.
So violent death. Wesley gets straight run through, and you see the bayonet poking out the other side, and I'm like,
"Yeah,
how is this episode going to get better?"
Yeah, right? And I know we were all excited about that.
Because he was whining, he's like, "I don't know what's happening. I was just in school, and now I'm here." And now,
yeah.
Oh, damn. I'm like, "Yes."
Yeah, then he just gets plowed. And then that's the first time that Riker uses his Q powers, was to transport everybody back to the Enterprise.
I thought he transported them back to the Enterprise, but then Q brought them back. And then that's when all the...
Yeah, he sends the Forge, Worf, and Data back, because there's the whole scene where Q is Data, and it's like...
That's right.
Right.
And but, yeah, then he sends them back, and then
that's when the aliens attack,
including Picard and Wesley and Tasha Yar. They all, everyone gets transported back to the planet
because they also get ensues. Yeah, and right after the death happens, they get transported back to the bridge, and all of a sudden, that's when Worf and Wesley are fine. They're healed, and they are all back on the bridge.
Right, yeah. But I mean, what that's doing is it's showing, like, it's giving Riker a taste of this godlike power. You know, like, they died or they're going to die, and he's able to bring them back, which is a very powerful thing.
Yeah, and it's like he was pushed into a corner. Like, he just saw, you know, a traumatic thing. He saw two of his friends, and one of them was kind of like a son to him because he's the one that kind of advocated for getting Wesley the acting ensign position to be able to be there on the bridge crew.
Right.
He's the one, you know, so they're very kind of like bonded as far as that goes, and to see him, you know, just get brutally run through is pretty amazing. So yeah, so when he's backed into a corner, he just, you know, does his thing, does his cue mojo, and then everybody's fine. But the moment they're back on the bridge, Riker has this smile on his face. Like, this smug, confident, I can do no wrong, and fuck anybody that says anything different, smile on his face. And that's when you know the episode's about to turn.
Yeah, that's nuts. To where... go ahead.
Well, it was basically just like Picard's kind of like basically like, what did you do kind of thing. And the quote that I wrote down here was like, no one has ever offered to turn me into a god before. So it was like, well, what would you do in that situation? What could you do if you saw? It's like, you would basically, that's like him say, you would do the same thing if you saw these people harmed in front of you. You would use this kind of forbidden power as well. Now, what were you going to say, Justin?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's exactly it. It's like, what would you do? And, you know, when we see these movies, like, what was that movie by Max Landis?
Chronicle,
yeah. Where, you know, a couple of them like the idea of being superheroes, but then one of them's like, well, how about we be a villain instead? You know what I mean? So it is a dangerous game to have that kind of power. And what would you do? And it's, you know, it's terrifying. I remember, like, as a teenager, watching, like, The Invisible Man, you know, it's like, or memoirs of The Invisible Man. It's like, okay, time to go to the girls' locker room, you know, and be a peeping Tom. And then that's how you get a taste of it, right? And then it gets all weird. And then, like, the Invisible Man always ends up being a bad guy because they're just, like, they get this taste of this crazy power. And it's crazy to think that that could happen to anybody, right? Where as soon as you can change or alter reality and to your will, then, you know, you lose your humanity.
And they even kind of like really hit the nail on the head with this when they're doing all these like famous quotations, and they're like, you know, power corrupts, and then absolute power corrupts absolutely. And that is really kind of like the root of this entire episode, because no matter what your intention is, if you have too much power and you exercise it, even if you think you're doing the right thing, there's going to be unforeseen consequences. Right. Or you're going to think you're doing a favor for somebody, but it's actually going to be, you know, something they don't want, which we'll get into with the gifts that Riker offers later. But so Picard and Riker have a back and forth talking about, you know, do you have the power to resist this temptation? You know, and Riker's like, sure, I will make a promise to you that I will not use my Q powers if that'll make you feel better. So then they go on this rescue mission to this planet where, like, there's colonials down there, and they're, you know, some shit went down, and they're trying to rescue them, and they find this dead little girl under the rubble. And had they just got there a little bit sooner, they would have been able to save her. Or if Riker used his Q powers, he would be able to save her. And there's this real awkward exchange between Dr. Crusher and Riker where, you know, she's like, you know, oh, if we had just got here a little sooner, like, can't you do anything, Riker? And Riker's like, well, I made a promise saying that I can't do it. I could, but there's a promise preventing me from doing it. The moment he comes back up to the Enterprise, he shoves that in Picard's face. Like, look, I could have saved this fucking kid, this innocent child that died. I could have, if I didn't make this dumb promise to you, I could have totally saved her. Why would you make me make this promise when it wouldn't hurt anybody for me to use this little bit of power to bring this person back? And then that kind of starts down an even further dark path, because now Riker thinks he's in the moral, he's on the moral right side. And now nothing Picard or anybody else is going to say, is going to be able to say anything to change his mind on that. So now he kind of has this, he is starting to get this cue sense of superiority over Picard and the rest of the crew. He doesn't even call him captain anymore. He starts calling him Jean-Luc, and he's like, well, since when are we on a first name basis, right? So it's just like all of this stuff starts changing inside Riker, just because he feels Picard wronged him by making him promise not to use his power.
Some heavy shit.
Yeah, it really kind of is. So then Picard and Q are talking, and they're both quoting Shakespeare, and it's getting incredibly pretentious.
Right, to thine own self be true. Yeah, that's from Hamlet, you know.
Yeah. What else we got here? So that's right around the part where Q returns dressed as a monk and is trying to pit the entire Enterprise crew against Riker to basically bring Riker over to his side, seeing basically like, why would you stay with these people who only want to hold you back when you can come with me and, you know, unleash your full potential? You know, he's going full Sheev Palpatine on him.
Unlimited power.
And then, in an uncharacteristic moment of just like kind of like, I don't want to say levity necessarily, but Picard's like laughing, going, he's nothing but a flim flam man. Yeah. And like, since when does Picard talk like that?
Yeah, that's like your mother was a hamster kind of
moment. Totally. It's a flim flam man. Which is such like a 30s like detective kind of saying, which would get, you know, we'll get into later maybe, because maybe he's been hitting the holodeck pretty hard. But, you know, we start seeing that whole like detective Picard thing in later seasons in the holodeck. So maybe he's already hitting those programs and he's kind of picking up some of the lingo. But it just felt so weird and out of place in this episode. It made me chuckle, made me smile. So then Q keeps goading Riker basically into, well, if you use your powers for good and you could give gifts, something that they want to the fellow members of your crew, surely that will prove that you are worthy to have these powers and that it's no big deal. It's totally fine for you to use them. And Picard kind of realizes that, you know what? This is only going to backfire. So it's like, sure, I'll give you permission to do it. Go ahead. Give us gifts. Do your best. And that's when Q is caught off guard totally there, but that's when Riker kind of thinks, oh, hey, maybe this is going to work out. Maybe I am going to win and have the upper hand here. So the very first thing that he does is, he gives a gift to Wesley,
right.
Makes him 10 years older and gives him a fucking square jaw of like an action hero and a mullet to match.
He should have turned into a Zoltar like, machine.
Yeah, yeah, but he has like this like crazy look on his face when he gives him the wish. It's like, it will haunt my dreams.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But he's still wearing the gray and rainbow sweater, like just like a couple sizes bigger. And he's like now taller than his mom. Now all of a sudden his mom's looking at him going, damn, he's kind of cute, you know? And it gets right. Weird. But it gets weirder. It gets weirder because all of a sudden, Geordi, he's like looking at him and like has this creepy, flirtatious smile. And he's like, hey, Wes, not bad. Right. And I'm like, what the fuck was that? I mean, I'm sure it was meant to be friendly, but it was like weird, creepy uncle, the delivery of it. So, yes, Geordi did get more to do this episode, but some of it was a little on the creeper side. So Data is offered the gift of humanity, but he has the foresight not to take it. You know, basically because it's not going to, he wouldn't know how to react to it and it wouldn't live up to his expectations of it, that kind of thing. He just knows that it's not right for him. He is not meant to have that humanity. He's kind of already accepted the fact that he won't be human. So he just flat out denies it. The next gift that he offers is to fix Geordi's eyes. And we actually get to see LeVar Burton with his visor off and his eyes normal. And you realize, oh my God, he's so young looking. You know, it's like, this is what he looks like without the visor. You forget. And the very first thing he does is like make googly eyes at Yar going, you're as beautiful as I imagined, you know, and just like gets all a little bit creepy with her too. Like he is just trying to get down with anybody who's
wherever the party is.
Yeah, wherever it is, you know, he is totally there. He's like the Lando of the bridge crew, right? You'll get down with anything, anytime, anywhere. And I appreciate that. Yeah, I guess I can appreciate that, right? So, but he ultimately declines, you know, going back to knowing, you know, because we talked earlier at the first episode where it's revealed that he is actively in pain wearing this visor and having this condition with his eyes, and he is always in pain. He would rather go back to that than accept the consequences of accepting a Q's help in restoring his vision. He would rather go back to the constant pain. So then he moves his attention over to Worf and makes him a Klingon mate that just like gets down on all fours and starts growling and just kind of like push fighting each other, just kind of, and Worf kind of has this look like he wants to do it. He wants it. But then he realizes that, you know what, you've made me somebody that I no longer have any connection with. Like, I don't, he is so kind of ingrained in human culture and Starfleet culture that even when offered a Klingon female as a mate, he feels like it's inappropriate and wrong for him because he is kind of outside of that Klingon culture.
Mm-hmm. And she got really primal. And even doesn't Geordi even comment on that too? Like, he's like, hey, are you guys going to have sex or something like that?
He says, and I wrote this down, he's like, Worf, is this your idea of sex? And that's when they were just like shoving each other around and stuff. So, So then basically, Riker realizes that even with all these powers, he can't make people happy. He can't give them these gifts that he thinks is going to change their perspective about him and his omnipotence. And he admits to feeling like an idiot. And Picard just like without hesitation just hits back saying, quite right, you should. And that was pretty much it. Like, fuck you. You know, get back in your place. Learn your place. Be my number one. And let's continue. Let's keep continue on with our lives, and fuck you. So, what are you guys' thoughts on all that?
Sure. That's a lot to take in. I think that the theme there is pretty solid. I like the idea of having a very responsible person be given a gift like this and see what they do. And even someone like Riker was able to kind of fall on the wrong side of the scale there, you know, and do what he thought was right. But in the end, you know, he wasn't able to look at it objectively like everyone else who was outside looking in, which I thought was pretty clever. And I feel like it's pretty close to how it would go. But did you guys notice that Deanna Troi wasn't in this episode?
Yeah. So it starts at the very beginning of the episode is Captain Picard is making a log entry saying, you know, having just dropped off, Counselor Troi, wherever they had just been. Yeah.
Okay, I missed that part. I was like making my food, and I never listened to the captain's log like almost ever. And I'm like, where the hell is Troi in this episode?
So it was in the intro to the episode.
So that's actually important because, you know, she would be the one that could get through to him pretty early, I think. So to take her out of the equation is probably why he was able to falter so quickly.
Yeah, the one person that could get into your head and kind of help write the moral compass, such as it were.
You know?
Yeah, that was smart from a storytelling perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's just so many awesome soundboard sound clips. You know, we mentioned Geordi, like him just saying, you know, Worf, is this what you consider sex?
Right.
It'd be the funniest clip to just play for like anything. And then Riker has a comment when he realizes what was going on. Where he's like, I feel like such an idiot. Picard's like, as you should. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, so fun. I think you know, Star Trek at its best is when it has these real strong themes and, you know, allegories, and you know, when it's trying to teach you something. And you know, this just had all the hallmarks of me for me for like just like what I associate with like good Star Trek. And I really like the interplay between the crew. You know, this episode seemed like, you know, by having all of them on the bridge for that, like, you know, that, you know, the last scene and stuff like that, it was so great. Yeah, it was kind of hokey when, like, you could do whatever you want. Promise me you're never going to do it, dead kid. You know, just that part, you know, I was kind of mad on. But, you know, it was a Riker episode, and it had a lot of stuff for the rest of the crew to do. And Tasha Yar didn't get a wish.
Right. Oh yeah, she didn't.
She's in the penalty box.
She's still in the penalty box.
Would you be the asshole if you wanted to keep your gift?
You probably would. Or are you asking, would I be that asshole that wants to keep his gift?
No.
Yes, probably.
not us, but one of the characters. If Jordy was like, you know, this actually is kind of a good thing for me.
You know, Captain, I really would like to keep these new eyes.
I'm kind of sick of the headaches and the pain. Yeah. So.
You're like, I get it. Worf wants to get his dick wet. And, you know, he can wait. But, you know, is this kind of life-changing for me?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, to everyone else's gift, it's just kind of like, whatever. Aside from, you know, Data doesn't take the gift, obviously. But, you know, his would be, you know, a life-changing one. But, you know, it'd be a big deal for Geordi to be able to see. So,
right.
I didn't want to blame him.
I was kind of hoping for a minute that Data would take the gift, because I wanted to see Brent Spiner in the outfit, you know, without the Data makeup on, you know, because we've seen him as Dr. Noonien Sung and we've seen him as Lore, but even Lore has the makeup on. So I just thought it would have been kind of cool just to see him in the
Starfleet. I want to be a real boy.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. I think it would have been funny if Geordi kept the sight and then when Q disappeared in like a blinding light, it blinded him again. He's like, oh my God, not again.
And then he
looks right into the light.
Just these little tendrils of smoke just come up from his eyes. Like, damn it.
Right.
Again, not this again.
And what's funny about Wesley, too, is like, as a teenager, everything is just, you live in the now, right? You don't, there's no big picture. It's always, I need this or I'm going to die. I have to have this or my life is over. I can't go to this party. Mom, Dad, are you nuts? My world is over. And his wish is just to be fucking Tom Hanks and big. And that's all there is to it. So I think it's so relatable to a teen to just want to be big and have, you know, fucking bills and a job and hate your life for a little bit. It's like, what is the rush? Like, just calm down. And just like Ferris Bueller says, you know, life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and take a look around every once in a while, you could miss it. And I think that is relatable on so many levels because all of us just want to grow up. It's nuts. And I hate Wesley.
Yeah. But even he was like, yeah, no,
Wayne,
I kind of like it there naturally.
To stop getting free shit and living free.
Right. Yeah, he was pretty quick. He looked at his mom and he was like, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah, he knew it was wrong.
He didn't even look like the same person. It's so funny, no, 10 like, years. Like,
there was no way that he would turn into that in 10 years. Now, obviously, we know what he looks like 30 years later. But yeah, he was not like that jaw on that guy, that right. build. That is like genetically incompatible unless he got some work done, you know?
Right. He just blossomed into manhood.
Yeah. This is what manhood looks like.
Oh, jeez.
So, anyway, yeah, definitely good times. So, now we get to the fun part of the episode where we're going to rank it. So, Justin, what do you think? Now, I know we've been pretty tight-lipped or pretty tight-gripped with our yays. Where do you think you're falling on this one?
I would fall on the yay for this one. I think it's I think it is worthy of a yay. I enjoyed it. I think there was a lot going on with all the different characters. Everyone kind of got a moment to shine and have some fun parts, and it was a fun episode. You know, it is unfortunate that you know, Riker was not able to save that kid, but I mean, aside from that one scene, it was a really fun episode. Even when, like, before we discover the kid, when Data's just picking up the Hollywood foam rocks and just chucking them and everything, that was pretty cool, too.
I'm like, straight up styrofoam, just, like, chucking them over his shoulder.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a yay for me. I enjoyed it. I like the heavy themes. I like the Picard's going on about responsibility and the Federation and all these things and what's important. And I think it was a good reminder for all of us that the whole, you know, Uncle Ben, with great power comes great responsibility. And we just aren't ready for that sort of responsibility. We as humans are incapable of being able to wield that kind of responsibility.
Absolutely. Now, we've got a definite yay from you. David, where are you falling on the yay or nay on this one?
I'm not even going to make you wait for it. I'm a hardcore yay. You know, this is what I remember from like the Trek that I love. You know, I think that there were some great character moments for multiple characters. We didn't really have any Dick Picard. You know, I think that, you know,
Flim Flam Man.
And the more I think about fucking just Worf coming out of nowhere and just jumping around and like just doing shit. And I'm gonna clip a lot of these sound bites, and they're just gonna be my go to thing. Like, Worf, is that what you consider sex? Or, wow, Tasha, I knew you looked good. Whenever he says something just super creepy. And then he says, same thing what we talked about with Les Wesley and stuff. It's just, there's some creepy stuff. So I'm a definite yay on this episode. I know, you know, a lot of people are thinking that we only like the booby episodes. No boobies in this episode, and I still managed to absolutely love it.
Yeah, you know what? I'm not even going to bury the lead either. I'm a definite yes. I'm a yay. So that makes it unanimous, all three of us. And this makes this episode our third yay out of 9 episodes. 2/3 have been nay. 1/3 has been yay. And you know what? For the first season, which we acknowledge is definitely different in tone than how we remember Next Generation in future seasons, I'm going to say that's not too bad, because I have a feeling that we're going to be encountering a lot more yays in the future.
Two of the last three were yays, so maybe we're on a hot streak.
Yeah, maybe this is the step in the right direction. So let's go ahead and look at what next week's episode is going to yield. It's called Haven, and it has a 6.3 star rating on IMDb. Yikes. So it's rated lower than this one. This last one
that's
was
not a good
7.
Sign.
And this one says, while on a mission to a planet called Haven, Counselor Troi meets her husband-to-be, a marriage arranged by her father years before, as the Enterprise encounters a ship deadlier than any combat could provide.
So, what does that mean?
I have no idea, but we're about to find out next week. So this one looks like a Beta Zed heavy episode.
Well, hopefully this isn't the adventure that she's on while the other episode happens. Hopefully the rest of the crew is with her, I hope. Hope this isn't a Troi bottle episode, because I'm going to go on record as a nay right off the bat, if that's the case. I might not even watch the episode.
Yeah, well, that's a good point.
Yeah, it's worth a shot. I mean, I'm genuinely anxious to continue watching every episode of this series. So even if it does look like it's going to be a stinker, sometimes those are the ones that are more fun to talk about. So there's always
It is possible that Worf and Will and Wesley are not in the episode, because on this particular episode for the cast, it says credit only for Michael Dorn and credit only for Will Wheaton. So maybe their names are in the title cards.
The opening credits.
Yeah, but they're not featured on the show.
Possibly.
So maybe we'll get some ship-to-ship combat stuff with the Enterprise while we're following a B subplot down on the planet's surface. We'll see how it all shakes out. But in the meantime, let's continue trying to ride this high from the Hide and Q episode. And maybe that bodes well for more Q appearances in the future. Maybe we'll be able to chalk him up in the generally yay category. And for those of you who do listen to the regular Geek Legacy podcast, the mainstream Geek Legacy podcast, we had a fun list about the best Star Trek episodes with Q across the entire franchise. So that included Voyager, and that included Deep Space Nine. So anytime that he made an appearance on screen, we were rating them. So
how funny would it be if we have listeners listen to this but not the regular podcast? That'd be funny.
I wouldn't be surprised either,
because there may be some people out there that are just like, you know what, fuck these guys and their opinions about regular geek culture, but you know what, maybe they have the finger on the pulse of Trek.
So if you love this Trek stuff, we got you covered in the CW on the mother show.
Yeah, I'm sorry in advance if you do listen to the other show. But anyway, let's go ahead and wrap this one up and jettison the escape pod, boys. I want to say thank you for listening to our show. And again, if you do like the sound of our sweet, sweet voices, go ahead and give the regular Geek Legacy podcast a listen. And we'll be back at you guys next week with the next episode, episode 10 of Star Trek The Next Generation. Thank you, and engage.